It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Kevin Marks joins us. Let's talk about the latest news from Google. He's back, baby. Rich Osterloh. I'm so excited. He's heading hardware at Google. We'll talk about that. We also will talk about how the internet is changing politics in a big way. Is it good or is it bad? Well, we have a nice long philosophical discussion. The kind of thing Twig's famous for. Next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 351, recorded Wednesday, May 4th, 2016. Boiling Man. This Week in Google is brought to you by Headspace. Train your mind for a healthier, less stressed life. Download the free Headspace app and begin their Take 10 program for 10 days of guided meditation at headspace.com/twig. It's time for This Week in Google, the show where we cover not really so much Google, but just a disclaimer right up front. That's just the name. We talk about anything that Jeff Jarvis and I want to talk about. And Kevin Marks is here, too. And that means guaranteed a wide-ranging, fascinating, intellectually stimulating discussion. Hi, Jeff Jarvis.
I won't make any political statements today. I'll just wear my hat, show my pin, and show my buttons, and say it's all hands on deck, people. That's what I'm gonna say.
I'm trying to think. Are you a lieutenant in the air?
In the Hillary Army?
Hillary Army, I guess he is. Yeah.
I wanted a little lapel pin, right? I thought a nice little subtle lapel pin. It wouldn't be too much. The thing is huge.
I'm not. Do you like that logo? I guess it's a good logo.
Yeah, it is. It's also
the arrow. It's an H with an arrow. I've been resisting calling her Hillary because I feel like that's demeaning because she's a woman. We should just call her Clinton.
That's confusing. But,
no, she needs more humanizing, doesn't she?
Oh, maybe. Also with us, Kevin Marks. Are you registered to vote in the United States? Are you allowed?
I am indeed registered to vote for the first time in this election.
Oh, how exciting! Are you a citizen or a resident? What's your?
I'm a citizen now.
Congratulations!
Oh,
can you recite the presidency of the United States in order, beginning with George Washington?
No, I've forgotten all that since I passed the test.
You did have to know that, didn't you?
No, not quite. It's actually easier than that.
In order, is it easier? Cromwell.
Yeah, right. Is it easier than that?
It was easier than having to do that, but it was a bunch of slightly obscure, odd things. And
it's like becoming a ham. You don't have to learn Morse code anymore.
It's not quite as weird as the UK one.
What do you have to do to be a citizen in the UK? I'm only asking for academic purposes.
For a friend.
I'm asking for a friend.
Well, it's similar to the American quiz, which are both kind of sort of weird combination of history and shibboleths and things. And the UK one involves like entitlement to benefits and odd like government regulation.
It's like civics.
It's but kind of it's stuff
in both cases that actual citizens born in the country rarely know.
Right. That's the other amusing part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think there should be a higher standard if you want to be part of us.
The new test is going to say que pasa, and if you understand that, you can't get in. Yeah.
How do you? Oh, no, so we weren't going to get political.
Sorry,
we weren't going to get political.
The longest part of the citizenship ceremony was being told how to vote in 5 different languages.
Good. You know what? There's three things you got to do as a citizen. You got to vote. You got to pay taxes, and you have to serve on a jury. All the rest is up to you. I think. I mean, it'd be nice if you contributed a little bit and stuff, but. You don't have to. That's the beauty. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of whatever the hell gets you off. Meanwhile.
Unless it's changing your gender, but.
Oh, yeah. Meanwhile, let's move to Larry Page's island. Google I.O. is coming up. That's where Larry Page said, we wish we were on an island. He won't be saying anything this time, I'm sure. You're going to it, right, Jeff?
I'm going to it. Yeah, and the timing is such that I think I have to do the show from down there because it's just they're always late and there's not enough time to get up.
Investigating. Well, and this time you're far away. You're in Mountain View. That's the way down in Google Land.
Yeah, but they've got connectivity there. You should be able to do that.
Well, we're investigating. We're going to. Father Robert has a house down there. Well, he doesn't. The Pope does, but he, you can use it. So we're trying to figure out how we could do this. It's not just you, by the way. Jason Howell is going to be there. In fact, he's staying the whole week.
Well, here's the question. Google has all those conference rooms with the Hangout conference thing.
Yeah.
I'll bet they would be happy to have us use one of those. And, we can, and whoever's in Mountain View, we could just sit there, like the two or the three of us, with one camera on us.
Hey, if anybody's listening to Google and wants to host Jeff and Robert and Jason Howell, Robert Ballaser, and Jeff Jarvis, all three of whom are going to be at the keynote, we'll do our own coverage here. But I would love to, but that's Wednesday morning, and then we'll do Windows Weekly, and then after Windows Weekly,
this week in Google. The wonderful Maggie Shields.
Ask Maggie. Have you been following the great, it's just great drama over Satoshi Nakamoto, Craig Wright claiming.
It is amazing. Do you believe him?
No.
Not
even close. It's kind of patently obvious that he all along has been using the Bitcoin in Satoshi Nakamoto as part of a long con with the Australian tax authorities.
Yes.
Oh.
And so, okay, so the question is, you know, could he be Satoshi Nakamoto? Some say he has the knowledge. Others say, yeah, no. The only data point that makes it is all at least a bit believable, setting aside the BBC's declaration that he is, The Economist was a little mixed on it. And, of course, almost a year ago, Gizmodo and Wired Magazine both said, we think we know who Satoshi Nakamoto is. He's this Australian entrepreneur and technologist, a physics guy, physics major, named Craig Wright, Dr. Craig Wright. The only data point that made it be somewhat believable this week was a blog post by the former director of the Bitcoin Foundation, a man we've had on Triangulation, Gavin Andresen, who is, you know, as far as I know, as far as anybody knows, a man of integrity, who is one of the few people who's actually corresponded with Satoshi Nakamoto, the inventor of Bitcoin, that everyone knows all along that has been a pseudonym for one or more people. We don't even know to the degree that is it more than one person. No one has ever known. Andreessen, one of the few people who's ever corresponded with him. And in 2011, when Satoshi Nakamoto, person or persons, withdrew from the internet, just disappeared, the reins were handed for Bitcoin to Gavin Andreessen. He boasted on his blog about 3 days ago, I believe Craig Stephen Wright is the person who invented Bitcoin. I flew to London to meet Dr. Wright. Part of the time there was spent on careful cryptographic verification of messages signed with keys only Satoshi should possess, etc. And that was what really set the world into a tizzy. Really? Gavin believes it? Because Gavin, in fact, the response of the Bitcoin Foundation was to remove Gavin's commit keys for Bitcoin, thinking that he'd been hacked. It can't possibly be Gavin saying that. If you've been following it on /r/Bitcoin on Reddit, you'll see all the back and forth over that. So,
but the point here is that, you know, if he is Nakamoto, there's straightforward cryptographic things he can do to prove it,
which he refuses to do.
She refuses to do, so therefore he's not.
Right. That's it.
You know.
Yeah. Great post by Dan Kaminsky, in which he says he talked to Gavin Andreessen, emailed him, saying, what's going on here? There's clear, unambiguous cryptographic evidence of fraud. And Gavin, you're lending credibility to the idea that a public key crypto, the public key operation could or should or must remain private. And then this is Gavin's response. Yeah, what the heck? I was as surprised by the, quote, proof as anyone and don't yet know exactly what's going on. It was a mistake to agree to publish my post before I saw his. I assumed his post would simply be a signed message anyone could easily verify. It wasn't. It was a screen capture of a bogus Bash script. It wasn't even real Bash. It had a flaw in it. Wouldn't execute. Had a single ampersand instead of a double ampersand. And why publish it as a screenshot? And it was probably a mistake to even start to play the Find the Satoshi game. I do feel grateful to Satoshi. If I'm lending credibility to the idea that a public key operation should remain private, that's entirely accidental. Of course, he should just publish a signed message or equivalently move some Bitcoin through the key associated with an early block. Feel free to publish or quote this email. In other words, Gavin's backing down, even though he hasn't yet backed down on his blog.
But there's some talk that he was shown him purportedly doing that, but then didn't actually take the signatures.
It sounded like a magic trick.
Yes.
And I think that, frankly, what happened was that Gavin was conned.
Yes.
I think we interviewed a wonderful book, by the way, The Confidence Game. The author, Maria Konnikova, writes for The New Yorker. She's really good, and it was a good book. It was about the grift, the con. And this fits it to a T. This guy made money based on this supposition that he might be Satoshi Nakamoto. In fact, money that the Australian government wants back, and he's fled Australia. The proof was a lot of hand-waving and nothing actual concrete. And we don't know exactly what happened in private, but it probably was basically a magic trick designed to fool Gavin.
God, I hope this is the new season of Mr. Robot.
It's such a great story.
It really is.
Well, so the thing is, security exploits and magic tricks are kind of a very similar kind of process. Teller wrote about magic, Teller of Penn and Teller, that the way that a magic trick works is you do something that's an unreasonable amount of effort, so nobody would expect you would have done it. And that's how you make a magic trick work. And a lot of these security exploits are an equivalent kind of thing. You do some unreasonable amount of effort to explore every possible pathway through the code till you find one that lets you in. And so that cryptography people should be less likely to be fooled by this stuff, but they can often retreat into the mathematics of it rather than into the practicalities of it. Most of the time people get hacked, it isn't because the cryptography was at fault, it's because somebody gave them the key.
And I loved the post, the tweet from WikiLeaks, which said, the only thing this proves is how poorly the fact checkers at the BBC and The Economist
Everybody's been just...
Most people did not fall for it. The good news is The Economist was dubious, or at least said it's not for sure.
Well, that's the thing. The BBC got Gavin in to check it for them. So,
right. They trusted him.
They said, okay, this guy took over Bitcoin from Nakamoto. He knows his way around this stuff. He should be able to check this for us. And
Right. He
didn't, it didn't work properly.
Well, and this is going to happen a lot because especially with things like crypto and security, the knowledge required to do this is technically challenging, difficult. And so you can't, I don't think you expect general purpose reporters to get this right.
Right, but if you say there's a test here, any Bitcoin client can sign with the key with your own key, right? It's in there in the menu somewhere. It's a straightforward thing to do.
Yep.
And then you can check that.
And it's a cryptographic based proof that is rigorous.
Yes.
And so all he would have to there's a couple of ways he could do it. He could just sign a message with that key, or although that would maybe mean that he just compromised Satoshi's key. Moving a Bitcoin from the Satoshi block, Nakamoto himself owns a significant amount of Bitcoin, which hasn't been moved or touched in years. Moving a block from that would be a lot more. The fact that he hasn't done that is a little suspicious.
Well, this is my crazy conspiracy theory last night was that this is all a game to get people to encourage him to move money from that block. Because, one of the panics about Bitcoin is that if that amount of money starts getting spent, then it will impact the value of Bitcoin.
Because it's
too much of it.
Right.
I
wonder where Nakamoto is in all of this. In the past, he said, no, it's not me.
Well, no, not with a traceable account.
Oh, really? Okay, so the news, when Newsweek unveiled their Satoshi Nakamoto a couple of years ago, somebody said that Nakamoto, there was a message from a known Nakamoto account that said, no, that's not me, but there wasn't provably Nakamoto.
It was an email account that
associated
was with, but it wasn't signed with the key that's in the chat.
And that's the thing. That's the beauty. By the way, boy, this underscores the value. Now that it's under assault by nations all over the world, including our own in Brazil, that's the value of strong crypto.
Yep. Well, to a point, but the other problem is that it's a credential thing. Most the head of the NSA said that actually we tend to win by stealing credentials rather than by breaking crypto, and just being able to just sign something with Satoshi Nakamoto's key just means that you have the key,
right?
You could have got it off his machine. You could have.
One would hope that somebody like Satoshi Nakamoto would secure his key. I secure my key. I mean, you'd have to break into my house to get it.
Well, but this was you know, I spent a chunk of time spending
and know my passphrase, which is a long, strong passphrase.
Sure, but you know, I spent a chunk of time in the sort of trying to make sense of the Bitcoin world a couple of years ago when it was ramping up, and the fascinating question for me was always. Going to the meetups and people were saying, this is going to take over currency, it's going to take over the universe, it's wonderful, it's provable, blah, blah, blah. And then I just did that for a bit. Then I say, and how do you keep your Bitcoin safe? And they said, oh, I print them out on bits of paper and lock them in a safe.
Well, that's one way.
And it's like, yes.
You don't have to do that.
No, but the point is that because they are pure bearer tokens and there's no repudiation.
You can get it stolen.
If you have a sized amount of bitcoins, they're going to be stolen. You know, there's other people who have them on little zip drives in safes as well.
Yeah.
So it is a problem, and it's a structural problem with the way that the system's set up. You know, it's trying to solve a problem that we kind of don't have, and it solves it in a very odd way, in a very expensive way.
I am somewhat pleased though that the tech press at least didn't get sucked in by this. They did before with Wired and Gizmodo both. Maybe we all were chastened by that experience and now know better. But it was the BBC and The Economist, and I didn't see anybody in the tech press jump on this one.
So, you know, the other thing that happened was, so I followed it at the beginning, and then I kind of got bored with it, and so obviously I didn't stay in track with it.
And I don't know why I'm so fascinated by this. I like a good con.
Right.
It would make a good movie. So the reason I bring that up is Nick Bilton, writing in Vanity Fair, blames the tech press for Theranos. And I'm not sure that's strictly true. As somebody else pointed out, it was in fact Vanity Fair itself, the New York Times, T Magazine, and the Wall Street Journal that created the Theranos bubble. The tech press, I don't think, really ever jumped on that Theranos train, or did they?
Well, they did a bit. I mean, you know, she's a charismatic founder. She talked at all their conferences. There was a chunk of that going on. So, but it's not.
It was a lot of the Wall Street Journal and Vanity Fair and the Times.
And somebody else wrote a piece last week that was like, well, there wasn't really Silicon Valley because none of the big firms invested in them. And it's like, really? Come on.
Is there anything to it? Is there a shred that just wasn't executed well, or
it's starting to look more and more like, I don't know if Elizabeth Holmes is at fault or not. I don't think you can decide that yet, but it's starting to look more and more like they never had anything that worked.
That's what I'm asking. Okay.
Well, I think I suspect what they had was something that kind of worked, and then when they went to test it in detail, they found problems with it.
Yeah, and they couldn't. Well, and they hired somebody to get it to work, he's since passed. He ended up being very frustrated and skeptical of the whole thing. His wife has talked a little bit about it in the Wall Street Journal, the famous Wall Street Journal piece that kind of turned it all around. They quoted his wife extensively, and it sounded like Elizabeth Holmes had an idea. But it was never an idea that was really viable.
Well, you know,
didn't stop them from going ahead and raising money and getting. Well, here's the other reason I think there's some culpability inside Theranos. They hired a board of directors not made up of medical experts, but of former generals and celebrities, people completely incapable of judging the science.
That's a bit fishy. No, but the thing is, I mean, the basic I'm being cat invaded here, sorry. Thank you, cat. Put you down. The idea that you can do blood tests on small amounts of blood is not completely crazy, but you actually have to prove that first before you can actually do it. And that does involve getting FDA approval, which is going to take a long time and do a bunch of different stuff. You know, we do it for diabetes testing. That's an established thing for taking a single prick there with your finger that sells in the millions. So it's not. It wasn't completely insane to say, well, if you can test for diabetes, for blood sugar with a single drop from your finger, maybe we could test for other things instead of doing a blood draw. But to actually do that, you have to do a bunch of science and actually test it. And they raised enough money to do that work, and they don't seem to have done it. So that's the bit that's dubious.
It's like they did it, but they couldn't get it to work, really, is what happened. And In any event, they're under investigation now, and I hope we'll find out what's going on. But I felt like it was a little unfair of Nick, who is one of us, or was one of us, to write in Vanity Fair saying the secret culprit in the Theranos mess was the tech press. When in fact, I think it was really much more the general press that was the secret culprit here. But it was a good story, right? And so I guess there's something to say about the press often falling for a good story as opposed to digging deeper.
Well, also not just the press. I mean, the investors too. This
everybody.
This is Mache's wonderful formulation, which is the business model is investor story time. What you're actually doing, rather than raising money by building a site with lots of users and selling advertising, is that you're selling a very good story to a small number of investors who will give you a few million dollars per head. And that is like the basis of lots of these companies, that they can persuade some people to give them money and then it becomes a bandwagon.
Nick writes, the system here has been molded to effectively prevent reporters from asking tough questions. This is the same, and probably somewhat true, the same complaint about Beltway journalism, that if you're going to cover Washington, D.C., you better go to the National Correspondents' Dinner and make nice with your sources, or they're just going to cut you off and you'll have nothing. He says, it's a game of access, and if you don't play it carefully, you may pay sorely. Then he quotes Jason Calacanis, who says, if you look at most tech publications, they have major conferences as their revenue. If you hit too hard, you lose keynotes, ticket buyers, and support in the tech space. Is that fair, Jeff?
I don't think that's fair, no. No.
Well, I don't have any conferences, so.
No, because that would say that Kara Swisher is...
I think she's pretty honest.
She's not. She's very honest and very tough. And people die to come to her conference, and they pay a fortune for it.
Right.
And she's tough on stage there. Well, that's Jason being Jason and going after everybody else's conference. But, of course, his will be wonderful.
That's a good point. He happens to have a conference as well. In fact, that's his main business. Yeah. I'm not going to blame the tech press. I don't think that that's their fault. I think if there's something, there's a flaw in the tech press, it's mostly that there's not much enterprise journalism being done. It's mostly rewrites and opinion. And by the way, of which I'm completely guilty, we don't do any enterprise journalism here.
There's the pressure to write lots of short pieces and rewrite each other rather than actually come up with something new. And
right.
the better organizations will spend some time doing long form things as well, but it's a challenge.
It's expensive. Somebody has to work on a story for a long time, months sometimes.
But it's expensive to have someone rewrite everybody else's press releases and posts too. If you're employing three people full time to do that, then that's another problem, isn't it?
Well, that takes us now, as long as we're in that space, to Facebook's. By the way, did your Facebook change dramatically today on Android? Mine did. Facebook, their interesting story about.
I looked at it today.
Yeah, Facebook hiring journalists.
Oh, this.
Okay, Jeff, break it down, man.
Well, gee, they hired journalists. They should have treated us like princes and princesses. Instead, they put us in a room and had us do a task that we didn't like doing. And so they're really mean, and they don't like journalists. They don't really care about journalists because they were mean to me.
Okay, so that's a whiny-sounding story. And they weren't invited to the beer bashes because they were contract employees, and they were all sitting in one conference room.
They were there to test one function and do one thing, and that was
I thought the interesting thing was one guy said, I felt like we were inputs – we were giving the inputs to an artificial intelligence machine that would eventually do this job without any input from us.
It's no different from Google constantly using humans to quality test the search. Yes, right. They use humans to check on things.
Right.
Yeah. And you could be on Mechanical Turk, or you could do it in a conference room at Facebook. I have little empathy for this. It's this belief that journalists are entitled. And it's not an indication of a larger view of what Facebook thinks of journalism. It was a function that they hired people for.
This is an article by Michael Nunez in Gizmodo. Want to know what Facebook really thinks of journalists? Here's what happened when it hired some, and he quotes a team that was brought in to curate the trending news section.
I did find it amusing that part of their job was to replace the word Twitter with social media.
That is funny.
Basically, what they've done is hired people to do what Tech Meme does. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Because Gabe started out doing this in an automatic way,
yeah,
and then found that he had to hire people to rewrite the headlines to make the front page coherent.
So then he has
an office around the world that does that.
It's probably just a coincidence that then I fired up Facebook on my Android device this morning, and all of a sudden at the bottom now, I have a new thing. Oops. I have a new thing. It says news feed. Well, I must be in an A-B test or something. News feed, world and U.S. news with its own very own little banner.
Whoa.
Funny, health and fitness, politics, music, TV and movies, travel. And
is it all?
I'm not clear where these are. Yes. And then I can choose. Let me see if I can find the settings for this. Oh, there it is.
Oofa.
I can choose which of these categories I want. And there's a lot of them. I took out home and garden and sports, which were in there originally. Games, spiritual, education. There's a selfies, celebrations, thoughts. This is some, I don't know, you know, it could very well be that I'm just an A-B tester for something they'll never do. But if
it sounds like paper. Is that like paper?
This is Facebook's blue app for Android on my phone. And so what's interesting is, yeah, I think these are, you see, there you are, Jeff, in the science and tech. These are all from people I follow. They're categorizing their posts for me.
That's a big deal, Leo.
That's what I thought. Now, I still have the news feed, but this is, and each of them has its own headline, header. See, world and U.S. news with a customize button that allows me to decide which stories within world and U.S. news I want to explore. And then I have some selections here. I can search. More posts from friends and others. That's important. Friends and others of that interest in your... So while it does look like these are the people I'm following so far, there's no reason to think...
You follow some news brands that are in there as well, like Washington Post?
Well, that's what I'm wondering is how long before... Yeah, see, okay. I don't know who Ian Fultz is and Global Nationals Video. So that looks like... Okay, yeah, see, this is RT... so you know what this there you is stuff
RT?
These are not no I don't these are people I don't follow. Ooh. MSNBC mm-hmm. But these are being shared Cooties. These are being shared by other people, but this is all news from other people.
That's an issue right there. So I mean, RT has real news cooties.
Yeah, well, I didn't pick it,
and so that it gets put in there. I mean, it's the same problem Google News has, is that, oh well, if you call yourself news, you're news.
Yeah.
Okay,
so that's a question. I don't know if it's just people I follow. It doesn't look like it is. Now, I have to say, I immediately went to funny, and there was a lot of good funny stuff. So at least I can go away from the politics in my feed and read the funny stuff. But, so you don't see that in your Android.
Well, hold on. Nope. I'm redoing it right now. I hadn't updated.
So. You don't see it either? Okay. So maybe it's just a test.
It says what's new, improvements for reliability and speed. So I don't think my version will have it. We'll see.
Well, it always says that.
Yeah.
They don't write good release notes.
They're very bad on the release notes. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I love Slack. Let me see what my version number is here. I can tell you.
Installing.
It's just 4.0. What's new? Improvements for reliability and speed.
Well, 4.0 sounds like a major release.
Well, it might have been for all I... Facebook's so bad at this. It might have been 4.0 forever. Let me see if I can get it. A more granular number here somewhere, if I can look at my settings or something. Now that's content.
This is not installing. Jesus.
I wish they would improve the UI. I mean, about 76.0.0.7.67. That's the actual version, not 4.0. Does anybody else get that in their Android feed? So this, we've heard, though, for a while that Facebook wanted to move from the feed of your family and friends' posts to news, right? They want to be a news journal. Haven't we been hearing that, Jeff?
Well, yes and no. I mean, they've done instant articles. They've done relationships with news companies, but they're not... I don't think they've ever said that they're going to be...
This looks like Flipboard.
Primary.
This is like Flipboard, right? It's categorized.
Well, also Nuzzle.
Or Nuzzle, yeah. So... Nobody in the chat room has this. All right, so maybe this is just,
that's a big deal.
Beta test. But this would be interesting, wouldn't it? Yeah.
All right.
You're verified on Facebook, right, Leo?
Yeah.
That might be why.
Well, Jeff's verified.
I'm trying to reinstall it again.
Oh, you took it out.
No. I wasn't on auto update for Facebook for some reason.
That's what Jason
Glanz. It's like I'm not in focus. Now.
Jason Howell does is he doesn't. It's his opinion that Facebook kills his battery life, so he uses a Facebook web interface.
Oh, I don't get that.
Well, there you wouldn't get this. Okay, just thought I'd raise that issue.
That's a news flash, I'd say.
Yeah, I feel like Facebook is moving in that way.
Well, the bottom line, and you and I have this discussion all the time when it comes to YouTube. Facebook, in my view, needs to hire journalists to better understand journalism and better know what its responsibilities and lack of responsibilities are and limits are and opportunities are and to translate to the world and all that. But Facebook should not get into the content business.
Yeah. After the primary last night, there were a number of people wondering, would Facebook take a stand in the presidential election upcoming? I think everybody kind of agrees that they could they would have some influence, don't you think?
They'd be calling some countries to regulate them.
Yeah. Google, for instance, is being criticized because they're going to pump some money into the Republican convention in Cleveland. They're going to do live streaming for them. And they put several hundred million dollars into the conventions 4 years ago.
I'd say putting in money to cover the conventions
no.
is different what the networks do, but putting
no,
in money
like
in
that.
The way that they profit from would be bad.
Yeah, no, not like that. More like brought to you by.
I mean, Google and Facebook and Twitter have been fighting over association with all the debates.
Mm-hmm.
So they work with Fox News in the debate. One or the other.
Well, their idea is that we'll cover both. That we'll do the same for the Democrats as the Republicans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Google also, this is in the run-out somewhere, Google also put up $250,000 for the Flint water crisis.
Okay.
Research and stuff, and that's a political stance in a sense.
Right. Google's going to be the official live stream provider of the Republican convention. Is that the same as NBC? No.
No.
That's different. You're the official live stream provider. But they're going to do that for the Democrats, too. I think both Facebook and Google really could influence the election. We know this. But it's your opinion that they will be extremely cautious not to do so.
They're going to be very careful.
You don't think that Mark Zuckerberg will be tempted?
No, but I'm honestly not trying to get political here. I'm trying to get hypothetical. What if we came to a moment where it really, really got ugly, that a certain presidential candidate got just beyond horribly
racist.
Well,
that's what I'm
thinking.
I mean, Mark Zuckerberg is obviously a very liberal person.
No, I don't know that that's true. No, some of his, I don't know you should assume that. I think that he has, but of course, how do you define conservative and liberal right. these days when Donald Trump is going to the left of Hillary Clinton?
I know, in some things.
On trade and defense and all
very
these
confusing.
Things.
All the labels are off. I don't know where I am anymore.
It's wacky. But I think Mark is also very much a capitalist.
However, if you're going to say anything, one thing that Donald Trump has shown is that he has a mastery of the internet and social media and was able to use it to very much to his advantage, right?
Yes. And I think, so my theory, thinking these days, I'm thinking a lot these days about the idea that we're past the mass media business model and thus past
yes.
the notion of mass.
Yes.
And so what we see is tribes reforming. And those tribes are not made of soil or blood. They're made in new ways and by new affiliations, new affinities. And those tribes can now find each other and go and do things like tear down the Egyptian government or tear down the GOP.
You have to read Andrew Sullivan's New York piece.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly what he's talking about. And it basically, what new media has done, what social media has done, what the internet has done, is make this a more democratic country.
Oof.
And he's...
Yeah, normally you would hear me saying that.
Yeah, he says, he's quoting Plato's Republic, saying, here's Socrates says, tyranny is probably established out of no other regime than democracy. That, in fact, once you get to true democracy, then you are as ripe as you will ever be for tyranny.
Yeah, I think that's true. Because the problem is that our institutions make other presumptions than we have today.
He says the elites protect us from this direct drive democracy. And it is the overthrow of the elites, in this case, the Republican elites, and the people speaking directly through the primary process. And it couldn't have happened without the internet. It's why you see Bernie Sanders so strong, too.
Go ahead.
So, I mean, the other thing that's odd here is that everyone's suddenly saying it would be very strange if Facebook took an editorial line on politics. And yet somehow newspapers and television stations are able to simultaneously make enormous amounts of money from selling political advertising in certain regions and also take both editorial and endorsement lines for candidates as well. So there's a sort of presumed rule set that's there for traditional media where you can say, well, the New York Times will very carefully deliberate and eventually endorse Hillary and so on. And the Economist will
and
actually...
And no one will care because...
And the Economist will think about it a bit more, but Fox News will do whatever Fox News does. But the point is, simultaneously, they're also expecting to be making large amounts of their revenue from selling advertising. And the bizarre thing that Trump has done is he has danced along the line between that very well, where he creates enough noise that they can treat it as something to report on and sell advertising to other people, and he's not buying the advertising. So he's kind of breaking this sort of presumed American consensus of the way this works is you're supposed to spend, you're supposed to raise $1 billion and spend it on TV ads.
One tiny area in which he's changed everything.
Right.
Sullivan writes, if late-stage political democracy has taken two centuries to ripen, the media equivalent took about two decades, swiftly erasing almost any elite moderation or control of our democratic discourse. And so much of this was welcome. You celebrated it. I did. The people have a voice. Fusty old media institutions grown fat and lazy deserved a drubbing. The early independent blogosphere corrected facts, exposed bias, earned scoops. And as the media matured and as Facebook and Twitter took hold, everyone became a kind of blogger in a way.
But go ahead.
I want you to read this, Jeff.
Here's the idea I want to play with, though. And I apologize, I didn't read it. I should have. Life's kind of out of focus right now. You know, you get that sense?
Are you a little disoriented?
Out of focus, you know?
Yeah, blurry, blurry. It's blurry. I don't understand it. But your books behind you are in perfect focus, by the way. You see, literature, it's always in focus.
What was I saying? So the problem is there are institutions. I've talked about this in the show before. There's a great book called The Institutional Revolution, that the institutions becomes obsoleted. And when you can measure things that you couldn't measure before, the institutions that you set up to get over those weaknesses. So the institutions we set up were the two-party system. And even though we're not a mass, the structure forced us into two masses. Half of us are red and half of us are blue, and we'll just figure it out, and we'll do it in a civilized way, and we'll be fine. And you all have to be Republican, you all have to be Democrat at some point, because that's the only way it's going to work. Unlike parliamentary systems in other countries, in the UK and Europe.
People are rapidly getting upset with that system.
Well, right? Exactly. So it's not that we become more purely Democratic, it's that a pent-up anger at the institutions that were there are a problem. The question is the Constitution outmoded in this age?
Interesting question. Sullivan writes, Trump intuitively grasped the vanishing authority of American political and media elites, and he had long fashioned a public persona perfectly attuned to blast past them. Really, I think, you know, very interesting, interesting article. We have reaped what we have sown, I guess. Or maybe this is just a little blip as we adjust to this notion of a true democracy and that everything will come back to normal. What role does a constitution have, really, if the media elites have fallen and the political elites have fallen? Can the constitution be far behind?
Well, can the notion of the nation be far behind?
Right.
Right.
And right.
That's what we're talking about really here.
So here's a scenario. So let's say a president decides to ignore Congress and to ignore the Supreme Court. Then the only thing to stop him is the military.
And let's say the military refuses to follow the orders of a president to
waterboard. Then you have a military coup.
Even if they just refuse to, not if they do something on their own, not if they take over, but they just refuse what they believe is an unlawful
order. Well, that's taking over order. In a way, isn't it? It's
well, it's what we expected in Nuremberg. It's what we expected
the
military to do.
It's really fascinating.
There's precedent in our own jurisprudence to say that that's what you should be required to do. Who is the defender of the Constitution?
We live in interesting times.
You know, not doing your job to talk to a Supreme Court nominee. There is an argument that says that's a constitutional crisis in and of itself.
Right.
Oh, we're going to piss off so many of your viewers, Leo.
I don't think this is a partisan conversation.
I think this is an observation
about what is happening in America, and something dramatic seems to be happening.
It's key to what we talked about because it is about the challenges to these institutions.
And I think that's it. I think there was a good piece by David Graeber who made a resonant comparison for me, which was calling back to Britain in the 70s. And in effect there, that was when there was a big sea change in politics where we went from the default sort of left liberal consensus to the default neoliberal market consensus when Thatcher came to power. And a big chunk of that was because the institutions broke down in the UK in the 70s, and we had, you know, we had three-day weeks because there were power cuts, and we could only have power for 3 days a week, and the IMF came to bail out the UK. And there was this sort of collapse in social order in that sense that led to people say, well, we need something different than what we've been doing in politics. And the sort of free market libertarianism that Thatcher latched onto was that new thing. And Graeber's argument is that the 2008 economic collapse and the fallout from that is that set of presumptions, the neoliberal set of assumptions, collapsing, and we're now in a state where people are looking for something else. And the question is, will we settle on something that's actually coherent, or will we end up with something that is chaos? And that's that does tie in with what Sullivan was saying there.
In other news,
long way from tech there, but
yeah, well, it's not, because what we're really seeing is the result of a lot of things, but in one respect, of the internet era.
Yes.
And
yes.
A disintermediation and a destruction, ultimately, of a media elite.
Media elite, also, political elite.
Elites in every respect. Crisis, yep.
Government elite, yes. Yep.
To a great degree, I would say, because of the internet. And that we have new elites, and this is where it kind of gets back to the question I asked earlier. We have new elites. Facebook and Google are the new elites.
Well, yes,
what do they do? Do they stand back and abrogate their responsibility? What is their responsibility?
So I've been trying to. I need to do some reading up on the Frankfurt School, because the argument that mass media was owned by the elites and is used to tamp down our brains and desires and just do that. So one could argue. Some do argue. I think my friend Emily Bell argues.
Mass media is the opiate of the people.
All of that. Well, religion, but same difference, yes.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. In the absence of religion, now we have mass media.
So some would argue
now we have Honey Boo Boo.
Facebook and Google are the replacements for that. Indeed, the mere name social media. Yeah. And I argue these days social media is a misnomer, right? We in media see the world godlike. We think that if you do anything that approaches to what we do, then we call that media. But Facebook is not media. Google is not media. Even though they do some of the functions that we did, even though they compete with us and sell ads, they are connection machines. They are not content machines.
They don't aspire to be...
No, but they are mediating.
I don't think so.
They're media in that they're mediating. They're not writing, but they are...
No.
They are,
yeah, I mean, newspapers were created to do exactly the same thing, just to sell ads, to do display ads.
No, they're doing something different, Kevin. They are enabling far, far, far more people to speak than we ever had possible in the media structure we have.
Now, that is true, of course, yes.
And so they're disintermediating media. They're doing the opposite. So that the elite that we had of a few publishers in towns is what they tore apart, and that's what we resent so much in media. So they're doing the opposite of that. That's what they live and thrive on, is giving everyone this voice, including trolls, dorks, and idiots on Twitter, and, you know, cat lovers on Facebook and whatever. We're not going to like it. It's not the elite anymore. It's the evidence that it's not the elite. So I don't think that they're a one-for-one swap. That's all I'm arguing there. Do they have power? Absolutely. Do we know yet how they're... Do they even know their own power? No, they don't yet. Do we know how they're going to use it? No, we don't. Do we trust them? Well, for now, I do, but I'd be a lot more trusting in them if I think they were more self-aware of their power. But I don't think they're media.
You don't think they have ambitions?
I think they recognize the danger of playing out. If they did have ambitions, I think they recognize that it would be dangerous to their business.
Isn't this what Facebook is doing with this curated feed, disintermediating and taking a position of curation, of editing, of media, of old media?
But it's based, their argument will be, it's based on what you have shown you like.
Right, but the point is that, you know, that's, you know, this, there's a certain disingenuousness to that, which is...
Yes,
that,
I agree.
You know, there was a thing in one of the NY Mag, The Feed is Dying, and if you saw that one, I just stuck the link in.
Yep.
But it's basically saying you're losing the sense that this timeline view that we had makes sense, but the problem is it doesn't work as you keep following people. It suddenly becomes too much. And I recognize this problem from, you know, years of feed reading and so on, is that you start out with, like, there's not enough here, there's not enough here, I'll add some more, and then suddenly there's too much, and then you're like, well, now what do I look at? And so, yes, they are saying we need to algorithmically filter your feed for you because you've overloaded yourself by following too many people. But then they also
chronological, writes Casey Johnston, does not scale well.
Right. But the other bit in there that I liked was the, which I... Of course, I can't find now, but was that you eventually realize that there is not one web out there. There are lots of webs out there. And you only see this when you leak through into some other world where
something
else is going on.
You're part of the mainstream that uses Facebook an hour or more a day. That's the problem. Facebook is a total consolidation. Of what was flattened democratic media is suddenly come right back to where it was.
No, but isn't
Facebook the number one way most people get their news now? I think it is.
Yes. So this is the passage that said this to me was it says social media is a multiverse of interest pockets, and you'd never know they were coexisting until you notice a tiny rip in the space time continuum, a widely shared Facebook post, a viral tweet, a slideshow of 20 Instagrammers you must follow. You pull it open,
yes.
And suddenly you're in a world of Christian women Instagramming their perfectly laid out scrapbooks, parents showing minion memes, teens who are extreme fans of Jason Derulo, and that's it.
That's what Jeff Jarvis has said all along. There's no filter bubble because stuff leaks in.
It leaks in poorly designed ways because people haven't thought about that aspect of it very well.
We're just starting, though. Yes, that's true. You're absolutely right. It's poorly designed and we're just starting. But, Kevin, the paradox there is everyone's going to complain that when it's well designed, it's manipulative.
Right.
Yes, of course. And they already do. You know, there's this whole, like, I'm being shadow banned on Twitter thing, which is, you know, basically the fundamental perception problem with parallel distributed media, which is that everyone has more followers than you. And the reason everyone has more followers than you is that the people who have more followers are more visible. So everyone you see has more followers than you. And so people suddenly
say... And when you have more followers, that becomes, at some point, people don't realize this, but at some point it becomes a detriment, right? It's more noise and it's more chance for abuse.
Yes.
You know, last week I had people saying to me, oh, if only I had my own imposter, you should be honored. Yes. It comes from, as Leo can well attest, too much attention, too many
pieces.
Right?
Well, no, but it's just, I mean, it's like, it's also not misunderstanding. But the fundamental misunderstanding is how these parallel distributed things work. And that happens at lots of levels because people model them poorly.
So say more.
But, so the basic thing is that, this is the long tail argument. There are parallel distributions of things. So there are very popular things, and the second most popular thing is half as popular, and the third is a third as popular, and so on.
Right.
And that rough pattern of 1/x plays out across lots of media. Now, what happened with the expansion of the web is that the range you could actually see of that went up a lot. So instead of just being able to see the top 200 people writing articles because they were the ones who were paid by the newspapers, you could see 2 million
yes,
of them.
Yes.
And
yes.
So it goes along a lot further. And this, you know, I showed this in Technorati more than 10 years ago.
Exactly. Back in the day, yes.
But this holds true for all these things. And as the number of people on board grows even further, when Facebook gets up to the billions, this same pattern holds. But the second order things start taking effect, and the waves that happen in between them start taking effect. But the classic thing that they do is they do this: you're either famous or you're not. So Twitter has the verified people who are famous and are in the top end of the curve, and then it has the rest of you who are supposed to consume and the bottom end of the curve, and doesn't have a good mental model for how things can move between them. But actually, the power law stuff applies at all the levels in between. So it doesn't just apply to an individual's fame. It applies to a post's fame as well. So somehow you may make a remark that takes off and gets famous and bursts out, as the guy says, bursts out across the barriers. And then you have got the person who wrote that has gone through the transition from these two into these two domains and is now going to be attacked by everyone on Earth for saying it's
poor Star Wars kid. There was a great story this week about the McLean's Star Wars kid 10 years later.
Yeah.
And how miserable he was and how he had to move. Yes, it burst across and it hurt him. I have to confess, after having Twitter hell last week, I longed for Facebook.
Mm-hmm,
build a wall around me, Donald. you know, that they're much more civil, much more control in my hands. The walled garden, the flowers are a lot nicer than the ones that the dogs pee on in Twitter.
Right, but you had a squire hell, really, right? I mean, that was the catalyst for it. But no, so the point is that yes, because Twitter is busy trying to curate the feed you see and is not spending the same amount of effort as curating the responses to posts and understanding how to model those. So they have
They'll get there.
Well, I hope so. I feel like I want to like.
So let me put two things on you. Two things. So one, I finally started using Inbox. And now, so I had an exchange with a Google executive this week. I just met somebody at a conference I was at yesterday, and she emailed me, and the inbox response was just the exact right response, but I felt a little creepy. She's going to know.
I know, it's too good. This is what it is, right?
Yes.
And as we discussed on the show last week, you get to the point where it says, oh, I already responded to her, took care of that, because I knew that's what you wanted, and I'm right all the time, so that's fine. So the same executive, she's the woman in charge of Google Play, said that Larry's view is that the web goes from a web of intent to assisting to suggesting. And a friend of mine, Dave Morgan, said, the next step is persuading. And so that if the system gets so good, it doesn't have to do that.
It doesn't have to auto-respond or persuade. I mean, no, but the point you could is keep
will.
Going.
Capability,
will it just because it can?
So the point is, I'm just saying
once it's there.
But this is actually the sort of fundamental human condition problem, is that we respond well to stories, and we were talking about this earlier about the responding well to the stories of the startups and so on. We respond well to stories and narratives, and so people get good at constructing them. And as we sort of spend time iterating over this with large AIs and journalists in rooms training AIs and so on, we're going to train these machines to be very good at doing the Trump thing of saying the thing that makes the audience that he's standing in front of respond well. Part of the reason that the net works for him and works against him at the same time is that he does that, and then you can compare it against audiences, but he doesn't care. You know, that was the thing that the politicians have always responded to the room and told one set of people one thing and one set another. In previous election cycles, this was a cause for shock and gasping. When
we've gotten over that.
Here's
an email from Trey Ratcliffe to me. I don't want anything, just sending you love hugs, T, which is very sweet. That's Trey. He's a sweetheart. And look at Google's suggestions. How are you? I miss you. And that's so sweet. I wish I could do all of them. Because those are right on.
Right.
Damn.
My fear
And now if I do that, I feel guilty because that was an automated response to a genuinely heartfelt.
Yes.
Unless his message was generated as well. But it is, I mean, isn't that amazing that Google knew that that was an appropriate response?
Well, it was even one of the responses today was, I was having a scheduling problem, and it said, how about 10:30?
Yes,
I don't know if I saw that in my calendar.
And was it the right answer?
No, it wasn't, because I wanted another day.
Oh.
But it's trying. And, you know, if you look at XAI, was Amy, you know, they're trying to learn how to do that.
And will we embrace our new, will we say, yeah, go ahead and answer that email for me?
Well, I've got one here that says, you know, we've got Homebrew Website Club tonight, and someone's saying, I'll see you at 6:30. And the auto response is, see you at 4:30, which is like,
well, that's dumb. Okay, it's not perfect. That's true.
Google knows.
Time zones are always hard.
Okay, I'll see you at 4:30. That's pretty funny.
So just like, well, I can't click that one.
Well, so my boss says to me, I let her, she says, okay, keep me posted, thanks. Google's response is, I will, thank you. Will do, you bet. What disturbs me is that every single one of those ends with what we call in the business a banger, an exclamation point. Now, is that because I use too damn many exclamation points? Or is that Google trying to be over-enthusiastic?
Huh. Well, it depends. It's the training set they've trained it on, clearly. If they trained it on you, if they trained it on a large pool of...
That's the question. What do they do? I don't know. Is that how I sound?
I've used it to hold back on my responses.
Like as you should.
Like, I see it and I go, you know, I think I'm just going to go with
tempered
thanks.
Response is better.
See you soon.
So it can save you.
Yes.
It's very interesting. All right, here's some good news. When Google bought Motorola, Rick Osterloh ran the place, and I thought did a great job. Responsible for Moto X, did just a bang-up job of making great hardware. He was also responsible for Moto Blur, but he apologized to me for that. And he said, we had to. In those days, Android wasn't ready for prime time. We had to put our own skins on it. Good news. Rick left after Lenovo acquired Motorola from Google. He stayed a little while, but he left Motorola. He is now back at Google building hardware. He's going to head a new hardware division. And I can't think of a better person to do it. I mean, he just really got it. He did a great job with Motorola, and I will love to see what he does.
Please, please, please let it include a continuation of the Chromebook Pixel.
I think we're going to enter a golden age of hardware from Google. So he's going to be responsible for Nexus, which is, I think, widely agreed to be among the top Android phones and the reference platform. He's going to work on Chromecast. Biggest success out of Google's hardware division is Chromecast and Chromecast Audio. Consumer hardware, including the new Chromebook laptops and Pixel C device. OnHub, that could use some attention.
Yes.
OnHub hasn't really gone anywhere. ATAP, which is the Advanced Technology Group, that's the project, among other things, the Project Era, which was the modular phone, and Google Glass. Man, I am so glad that they brought back Rick Osterloh. This is really, really
so. No good. Nest stuff, no Home stuff.
No. That's a separate company under Alphabet. This is, you know, I really believe that the Chromebook is just about to just hockey stick.
Yes. What do you think of that? So there's the new HP. We talked about
three beautiful new Chromebooks. HP's looks fabulous.
Three? I thought there were two.
Well, Acer has the other. Those are both aluminum. And Dell is doing now Chromebooks for business. All three are what we were begging for, which is kind of mid-range, $500-ish, high-end Chromebook.
Is the HP a touchscreen? I couldn't
see it. It is not. What's interesting is few of these are touchscreens. In fact, I don't think any of them. Well, no, wait a minute. The Dell has a touchscreen, or can be equipped with a touchscreen, but neither.
And
the
again, I'm going to kvetch here as I always do. No LTE in any of them.
Yeah,
I'll pay the monthly. I want it there. It just goes on wherever I am. It's a beautiful thing. In fact, put in Google Fi into it, and I'm a really happy kid.
Wouldn't that be
additional only Google Fi?
You saw that Rick is going to oversee Chromebooks for Google, and I would bet you that there will be a successor to Pixel that will maybe be better. We'll see.
Now, do you think because you were prescient last week, Leo, when you said that you couldn't get any repairs on the old Chromebook?
Yeah.
And then the $999 Chromebook is no longer for sale. The more expensive one is, but I wonder if they're just
playing out the stock. They're going to sell it out. I wonder if they're going to announce something at I.O. That would be great. And here's what I also expect at I.O. is an Android store on Chromebook, on Chrome OS.
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating. I feel like here we go. This is going to be a compelling argument because now you'll be able to, if you want a word processor, you can add a word processor. You want some better games? You can add some better games.
The issue has always been in that case is that the UI of the Android apps doesn't work on a laptop and doesn't work without touch.
It's a window. It's going to be a portrait window. And it does need touch. You're right. Although I guess a mouse could duplicate touch in every respect, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can run the emulator and click things, but it's still going to be a little odd. Yeah. It's harder to do pinch. It's not so much, you know, you can touch
right.
And click.
Yeah.
If you want to do pinch and those kinds of things, that's where it gets tricky.
Well, I would guess that we'll see Google put touch in the Pixel, and I would guess we'll continue to see touch.
I can't wait till they give us all a self-driving car to go home with. Go for
it. Well, I just feel like Chromebook is you know, Jeff, you were a supporter early on, and I think
I'm more than a supporter. I'm an addict.
You're 100%.
Yeah, because I got a little depressed last week when you said that there was no more support for the old Chromebooks. I thought, what if they lost favor? With a low-end one. I mean, I have to have a high-end one. And the HP looks very good, and that gives me some comfort, but I love the Pixel.
It's a core. Look at 3K display, Core M, 16 gigs of RAM, USB-C, which is going to be gangbusters. I think we're going to see a USB-C universe in another year or two.
And USB-C to charge?
Yeah. But USB-C has so much more capability, including, and HP's doing this, the ability to drive big monitors direct.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. With two full HD displays, if you want.
Ooh.
And gigabit Ethernet using an HP dock. So starting with a 4-gig version, start at $499. If you want to get the Core M7, 16 gigs of RAM, $1,029.
Whoa.
So this is the mid to high. That's Pixel range. Yeah. You're mid to high now. But it's aluminum. It's, by the way, prettier than the Pixel. Pixel is kind of a clunker. This really looks like an Ultrabook. It is an Ultrabook. In fact, it's basically HP's Ultrabook with the Chrome OS.
And it's coming out later this month?
Yeah.
I wonder whether they're going to get Best Buy shelf space or not. Because the little... You go to Best Buy now, right? Mondo huge Samsung display, unbelievably huge Microsoft display, and this little tiny table with Google.
Yeah, but remember, Chromebook is now the number one seller in schools. 21% of all new computers last year in schools were Chromebooks.
And, you know, you've often recommended it as a grandma machine.
Yeah, on the radio show now, what I say, and I think this is really true, is... You know, 10 years ago, you had to buy Windows or Mac, a full general PC with all that entailed, the cost, the complexity, the security issues. But that's all you had. That was the choice. That was all you had to choose from. And we still, there's a little inertia for these full-service, full-purpose operating systems that shouldn't be. Most people just surf the web and get email. And a Chrome OS is exactly right for the vast majority of PC users. They're overbuying. They're buying much more complexity than they need. And as a result, I mean, I get calls all the time from people, you know, my start menu has disappeared on Windows 10. What do I do? And it's like, you're screwed.
Yeah.
And if they had a Chromebook, I'd say power wash. And you're done.
Five minutes max.
Yeah.
What?
I hope adding Android doesn't add to the complexity and make
it. Well, I had a weird experience a couple of weeks ago, which was the Android update came in for my phone and bricked it. And that was a nightmare.
That's not
was
that good.
The six? That was a six, Kevin, right?
Yes.
That happened too.
Wow.
Yeah.
That happened to a lot of people.
Uncommon.
The 6P?
Six.
The Nexus 6. Oh, get rid of that thing. That's 2 years old.
I'll come and pick up one of your spares.
By the way, you should. I'll be glad to give you one. That's, by the way, another thing that's a very unfortunate trend is companies are starting to treat 2 years as the normal lifespan for a smartphone,
right.
Which is so wrong. But for security reasons and hardware reasons, they're not. I mean, it's just a big mistake.
So what happened, Kevin? Did you get in the dev for the new OS? The end,
what I had to do was, the problem is it's now locked. It was locked, so I couldn't reinstall it. I couldn't even reinstall that operating system, but I could install the alpha of N. So I'm now running Android N on it, which is interesting.
Pretty nice. Actually, N is not bad. I like N. I'm running N on my 6P and my Pixel C.
They made the notifications much less readable. I really don't like that.
Yeah, they balled them all up together, but I kind of like that balled up.
Oh, I like the notifications much better. They're more informative.
But the type is smaller and grayer, and they've got, like, huge margins around them.
So yeah, I know what you're saying.
Age.
they,
Yeah, they'll fix like, that. That's a that's the kind of cosmetic
age
thing
and typographical fussiness
for sure. Fix. No, no, no. That's the kind of thing you see in an early release.
Yeah, no, I think that's, I hope they'll fix
that'll
that.
Be fixed.
But no, I mean, there's I've got a long rant which I should actually write up at some point about Google gradually making every bit of text on the system grayer and grayer and it disappears.
Those damn young engineers. Gosh darn it.
Well, no, it's the designers in the perfectly lit rooms with
exactly.
with the big screens and, like, oh.
And young eyes.
Yeah,
they can see.
But the you know the latest thing is the phones now like dim the screen as well. So yeah. the new iPhone makes it the color of whatever lighting you're in.
Oh, I hate that.
And they also turn it orange at night and so on. So
right.
It's like so
I hate that
first of all we took
night.
The contrast down and now we're going to actually make it even more illegible just when your eyes are really tired. It's like
they're trying to tell you put the phone down and go to bed. It's time well, to go to bed.
It's Arianna Huffington getting after you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She's the queen of good sleep now. She's like the expert on
sleeping.
That's
all she is. That's all she is. I wrote a piece about 6 weeks ago, which I said, please, Arianna, we don't need another Oprah. We need the old political Arianna back.
Bring her back now, if more than ever.
Now, if ever. Now, more than ever. So I did a panel today at the wonderful DLD conference.
Oh, neat.
And on the panel was Gabe from Casper.
Oh, nice.
So I said, as a matter of
one of our sponsors,
full disclosure and gratitude, I said, right, a loyal sponsor. And he said that the Twit users are the most engaged and passionate and loyal, and they just they're amazing.
You know, it's so funny because we hear that for every single advertiser says that, but a lot of them don't want to say that because they're afraid we're going to like charge them more. Or so, I mean, those who will say anything will always say that. Every single that's sponsor. Amazing. I mean, that's why people come back year after year. It doesn't surprise me. And it's no credit to me. That's a credit to you, the people who listen to these
Twit
shows.
Army.
The Twit Army is quite amazing. And yeah, you deserve a cut. Your cut is you get all this for free. That's the cut. Yep. Is that the sponsors yep. pay for it so that we can give it to you for free.
He was so happy with the commercial you made. And it was kind
of
neat.
Nice. That's good.
So, yeah, you know, putting on your pajamas, that is going the extra mile.
Not necessarily. I think putting on your pajamas is kind of taking it easy. That's that's more of a kind of a slack thing.
So that's more of a
feet up and
Playboy thing.
Yeah.
Hugh Hefner.
Hugh Hefner.
POS Hugh Hefner.
Hugh Hefner, baby. Google has released a Trips app. I haven't seen it yet. I guess it's in beta.
No, it's only for – I really want to see it. It's only – they're only testing it in the community of people.
They should be so afraid. TripIt should be so afraid.
I mean, I love the way on. I love the clustering of travel stuff on Inbox.
Yeah, that's a start.
Not to you, but it was new to me. It's great.
This looks like a better TripIt, basically, right? And because Google owns ITA, it could really be a better TripIt. They have a lot of information already that they can tie into this. So look for Google Trips. The APK Mirror does have it, but I don't recommend installing stuff that way. All about Android viewers, you can do that, but not us. Let's see.
Did you read the founder's letter?
Oh, you got it? Did you put it on there, Jason, from the APK? Crossload? Oh, man. Jason's an early adopter.
Jason's the man.
Jason. Not Howell. Cleanthes, our producer.
Cleanthes did
yeah,
it?
Yeah, Cleanthes.
Wow. Oh, macho.
Ooh, it's
man.
Purdy. It's purdy, purdy. Trip to Sonoma. And then you can download. Look, there's a switch to download San Francisco. I presume that's the map. So you have it on. Oh, man. Let's add a trip. Search destination. New trip for my location. Nice. I'm tempted to get this, but I'll wait. I'll be a good boy. I'll be a good boy.
I wish I could sideload the new Facebook.
Yeah, I guess it must be a soak test of some kind. So
yeah, that's the thing is that will be a percent turn on thing like yeah. all these. That's part of the reason their release notes are so vague is because everyone's an experiment.
Yeah, they're known to do that, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
But I'm surprised they don't identify everybody in media and cut them out of tests.
Well, keeping up with all Leo's phones would be hard.
Shh, they don't know.
Leo launders his phone once a week.
It's yeah, like, no, it's like that's burner right. demo it's phones. A burner phone. They have no idea who this phone belongs to. Well, they might. I don't know how they would know. How would you know that?
They know. Oh, they well, your account.
Do. They probably do. Do you have the new? Did anybody have the new Google keyboard? Is that widely? Because I've been reading about that. I still use SwiftKey. I should probably.
I use SwiftKey, so I wouldn't know if I got the new
keyboard. Yeah, me too.
I've been using the same damn keyboard since sixth grade. I can't.
No. On the phone, man. On the phone.
I know that. But I just I don't like keyboard
on,
changes.
Man. Come on, man. On the phone, man. All right, let's take a break. Dude. Come back with more. Google Chrome now the most popular web browser in the world. Google Play is now labeling which apps contain ads. Thank you. I'm going to try to get this Google keyboard while we're talking about Headspace. You know, we live in a stressful world. I was up late last night worrying. And that means I didn't get a great night's sleep. And that means I was a little cranky in the morning. And that means I probably snapped at Lisa a little more than I should have. That's when I fired up Headspace and calmed down. Look, our minds are the enemy within. They can weigh us down with fear, with anger, with stress, anxiety, to the point where it's difficult to sleep, difficult to get through the day. But you do not have to live this way. Train your mind. There's an app you can put on the phone called Headspace. And I love it from this great guy, Andy Puddicombe. Andy was a monk for 10 years. And, like a Buddhist monk. And so learned meditation and all of that. And now his mission is to kind of, in a very normal, non-mystical way, bring the benefits of meditation to everybody. His TED Talk about meditation has 5.5 million views. And he's the leader in the meditations on Headspace. And I hear Andy's voice, and I just immediately, you're really conditioned, because he's so cute and sweet. And he just says, now it's time to relax a little bit and just be...
Like his gym membership for the mind.
Yeah, see, he's just...
Using proven meditation and mindfulness techniques. Yeah. We'll show you how to train your mind.
And it's not fussy, and he's not, there's not a lot of kind of...
You get Headspace on your...
It's like a friend in your head.
Or visit the site in your browser and follow the simple instructions to get going. The best place to start is with Take 10.
I kind of have a crush on Andy, I'll be honest with you. But he's made my life so much better. Now, we all know meditation is an ancient tradition, but maybe you didn't know that there are literally thousands of scientific studies that show it really works. It will help you improve focus. It will help your relationship harmony. It will decrease anxiety and stress. My physician told me, he said, you don't want to get a heart attack? Okay, you need to modify your diet, you need to exercise, and you need to reduce stress. You need to find some techniques to reduce stress in your life. You know that, Jeff. You had a very stressful week last week.
So much so that I could have used this because I literally was getting,
you're getting palpitations.
Fibrillation. Yeah. I was getting palpitations. And I have to, it's made a big difference in my life. I have to.
I'm not going to make medical claims, but I got to say, it's just breathing 10 minutes a day. First 10 sessions are free. If you meditate for several days in a row, you're going to get up some bonus gifts. It's unlimited access with the subscription to the Headspace collection, including... I love this. They have SOS meditations. You could have used that, Jeff. Help me.
Yep.
I need to be talked down off the ledge.
Do they also have a hit squad for trolls?
No, but you won't care about the trolls anymore. You relax. You'll give them up. You go, okay, fine. The Take 10 program is free. It includes progress stats and the buddy feature so you can link up with friends for support. I love it. I want you to try it. Over 5 million users now with Headspace. This is a huge success. Download the free app. Take the... free Take 10 program, 10 days of guided meditation. You can find out more and get a link to the app at headspace.com/twig. Headspace.com/twig, TWIG. Train your mind for a healthier, less stressed life. I wish everybody.
I'm downloading it right now.
Yeah, I want everybody to do this. It would just be a better world if we all did this. Start your free trial today, headspace.com/twig. And we're so glad Andy decided to reach out to you on this network. So nice. So pleasing. I feel better just listening. That's why you sit in your garden, isn't it, Kevin? You just want...
That's right. To sit out here with the birds and the cat and the poodles.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, somebody on Twitter asked, how come there are always oranges on that tree? And I think we're going to find out it's a fake tree.
No.
No, this is how oranges work. So most fruits... Those fruits are only ripe for a short time.
That is such a Kevin Marks statement. No, that's how oranges work.
it's like apples. They're in season for like 3 weeks. Soft fruit like peaches the last 2 days if you're lucky. Whereas citrus fruits, basically, they just stay on the tree as long as you want to keep them there. And they get thicker and thicker. I mean, if you're growing them commercially, then you harvest them at a certain point so they're all the same size and same ripeness. But basically, they come in at the end of the year. They come in sort of December-ish. And I just don't bother picking them. And they just get bigger and bigger. And then the new ones come in, the next time round. So the big orange ones are from last year. And then the little tiny green ones that are coming in for next year. But it means that the pith gets thicker, but they get a little bit sweeter but they're good. And the lemons are even better that way. The lemons that stay on the tree get really delicious over time.
So my mouth is watering.
So you may remember, I think we even reported on it, that Sandy Gould, who's the HR chief at Yahoo, decided to leave last month. Or actually in March, he wrote an email saying it was time to take a break and decide on his next adventure. So there's some debate over why he's back. According to his Tumblr, he had a dream. He had a dream. Or she, I'm sorry, had a dream. No, he, I'm sorry. Sandy, it's ambiguous. He had a dream that he was talking to Marissa Meyer. And discussing his new role while reviewing offers. So Sandy says, next morning I called Brian and said, you're going to think I'm crazy. Now, that might have been his dream, or it could be the fact that Yahoo offered him many millions of dollars not to leave. And that was a dream.
Was it where he was going? Where do you think he was going?
Well, no one says. Just, according to Kara Swisher, who read the email, the internal email, of course, just time to take a break and decide my next adventure. Apparently, Marissa did come to him, not in a dream, and make a multi-million-dollar offer to keep him. And, maybe you're right, Jeff, because according to sources, this is Business Insider, Meyer made the counteroffer after finding out Gould was leaving to join a company she resents. Wonder who she resents. Well, anyway, if you're gonna go to a company Marissa Meyer resents, it's probably for a big offer, and Yahoo had a bigger offer instead, and now Sandy is staying as head of culture, coaching, and communication.
I want them to spell it culture.
Culture. He's a culture head. Until Marissa leaves in about 2 weeks for with her $55 million severance package.
Well, that's what I was thinking. So it's like he's suddenly going to have a really big job laying off all the people that are going to get laid off when the company's bought, right?
Yeah. That's what his job will be, laying people off.
That was the great joke about getting Carla Fiorina as vice president of TED, is that when he had to lay off everybody, she has experience.
Oh, I love Robert Ballester's tweet. Last night he tweeted, Carla Fiorina is the first candidate to drop out of the election after the primary twice in one primary season, and we thought that the Compaq HP merger was bad. Very good. I didn't say it quite right, but Robert had a much more well crafted joke, but that was good. Anyway, so
it's a bit
Gould
too much
back.
Like watching Silicon Valley, which was.
Oh, I love that show.
This week was basically PTSD for lots of friends of mine. They were like, I couldn't watch it anymore.
Which
it
part? Funny.
The part where they bring in the new CEO.
It's getting a little real, isn't it?
Everything changes. We got to sell to Enterprise. And
yeah. You know what? I had the same.
The product you thought we were making goes away.
I've never been through that. Well, I guess I've sort of been through that. I had the same reaction. I thought, this isn't funny. This is horrible.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. This is.
Oh, and Stephen Tobolowsky, who is such a good actor and really does a great job, is perfect.
He is so good.
Did you see? I haven't even watched the show yet, but did you see that PETA has complained about the horse scene?
Okay. Why were they complaining? Those were happy horses.
Oh, they were arguing that it was forced rape. Oh.
Okay, PETA. First of all, I'm almost certain that that was a green screen and that was a video they acquired. By the way, YouTube is full of those videos.
There is a story about it. Hold on.
Yeah. Hasn't YouTube become a resource for watching, for want of a better phrase, horse fornication? Because that's what it was. Okay? And it was very graphic. It was like a porn movie for horses. And Stephen Tobolowsky's standing there watching. And then I really should warn people. I mean, it is, you know, it's HBO. You know you're going to see something. But it was, I wanted to cover my eyes.
Mike Judge told The Hollywood Reporter, there was no CG. We captured that moment.
What? That they actually shot new footage? There's no way. He's lying because how do you time that?
No, they staged it. They staged it. So if you actually watch the scene, there's a little bit where they're standing in front of it. And then Richard says, this is too much for me.
They cut away. Okay.
And then they have the long conversation and they go back. So there's, okay.
But it felt like there were lines in front of it. Like I thought, how did they time that?
Right. But that's just because Tobolowsky's very good. And they were probably able to get him to do it in
one
take. If
you ever need a guy to do a line, well, one horse is...
Never mind.
So Mike Judge says, so what were the next steps? Well, we had to do a lot of horse research. We kind of had our hopes dashed at one point because someone was saying, oh, no, it's all done artificially. They would never do that. But then we looked into it further and found out that most species of thoroughbreds will only inseminate naturally.
Wow.
So we just looked for a place where it was actually going to happen.
Oh, my God.
Right.
That is that is an unusual amount of dedication. So he really had a vision, didn't he?
The first place they went to, if they'd gotten there 50 minutes later, they would have been arrested because it was raided as a pot farm.
Oh, boy. So maybe PETA has some merit.
Says Hollywood Reporter, how long did it take to get the money shot? Oh, less than a minute. That's the only thing that's fake is, well, the horses actually go very quickly.
Yeah.
So we had to repeat the footage some.
Okay, thank you.
But if you cut it all together, the horse just finishes really fast.
Yeah, no. So maybe it's not a green screen, but it's simulated.
Okay.
Well, no, they really did it. It's just they did it longer. It's just one shot.
They looped it.
I love it. So then PETA... where is it here?
Well, there are.
The rat.
I don't want to see it. I'm not going to watch it.
PETA calls it arranged rape. Of course, this is what horse farms do.
What do you mean arranged rape? They're breeding animals. All right. I'm not going to go there.
The mares are tethered together during the process.
All right. Fine. I'm sorry. We shouldn't breed horses. It's not like they were breeding to eat them.
Right. Or wear them.
I'm not an animal lover. I like being high on the food chain. YouTube is apparently about to launch YouTube Unplugged, which will be a cord-cutting service. Not about to launch. Bloomberg says 2017. This is the holy grail. Apple's been trying to do this for years. Make deals with networks and content creators to do a cable cutting service. Apparently, Google's been plotting this for several years as well.
Isn't Hulu ahead of them now? Hulu's doing this too.
They've had a variant of this with fiber. Remember, they've built this out in two or three markets.
But that's
there.
basically as a cable company.
Yes, but the point is that's where they've previously they tried to do the TV and assumed they could just plug it, just be the box that sits in front of it, and everybody cut them off because they wanted to do deals.
Yeah.
So now they're going back and doing deals.
Well, everybody this is the holy grail for Amazon too, Apple and Amazon, and everybody wants to do this. Dish. Sony. Sling has kind of done this. Sling is with their Sling TV service. But it's kind of limited content. The real question is, can you get the networks? You see, the problem is, here's the real problem. NBC is owned by Comcast. That's the problem in a nutshell. Comcast doesn't want to see this. They want you to use their service.
But the dominoes are going to fall.
CBS is all behind it. Les Moonves says this is great.
Yeah, but they've already got lots of pieces in place. They've got YouTube Red for the music stuff, which is bundled with Google Play Music, which means that you get music videos without
ad free,
which is nice. They've got already got the ability to pay for things on YouTube. You can buy movies and full length movies and things, and some TV shows, I think. And that's sort of that's coupled in with the Google Play Store on Android as well. Those do transfer, I think. Is that right? You use them more than I do, Jeff.
Right.
So they've already got big chunks of the contractual stuff in place. The question is, can they do a subscription version of you get certain stuff that competes directly with Netflix and Amazon, what do you call it? Amazon Prime.
Yep. Well, that's the other fight to me is being able to download the shows.
Oh, you won't be able to do that. That's going to be. Well, maybe you could DVR them, though. You need to be able to DVR them, don't you?
Yeah, see, that's the point. I'm doing it with Amazon Prime, and I'm doing it with Play. I'm paying money for it.
Oh, boy, that
scares them. But at some point, if I'm paying for a service.
That scares them. So Hulu has also announced this will be Hulu's service in 2017.
They have three networks, obviously. They don't.
Remember, Hulu was started by the networks, so Hulu's in a different position. But the networks fought like dogs over how Hulu should be run. They learned to hate each other.
Yes, and they split it out again, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't know who owns Hulu now.
Oh, so the other thing here that was quiet, I don't know if this has shown
up. Fox and Disney own Hulu, and they are the ones that are apparently close to signing deals. So there.
So Google Play Music added podcasts. Did you see that?
Yes, see it. I know it. We're in it.
You're in it, yeah. But it's weird because you don't subscribe to them. You just search for them. So it's a little bit odd.
Yeah, I wish you could subscribe.
Yeah.
So they sort of missed the point a little bit. So
a lot of these people, so this is kind of how Spotify works too, see podcasts as disposable entertainment. Like like music. Like you're listening and, oh, maybe today you'd like to listen to some spoken word. So how about this? But there's no, you'd have to search for it to go back and listen, every week. So it's kind of a little bit, I mean, it's okay. I'm not unhappy about it. We're very happy to be there. And if you search for Twig or Twit, if you have Google Play Music, you'll see all of our shows there. But you're right. There's no, like, magic way to subscribe, I guess. Let me pick a Twig and see.
There's a subscribe button.
Where is there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there is. Where?
Yeah.
I didn't see it when I looked for it. Okay, let me look.
Twig. Where's Twig? There it is. Oh, yeah, there's a subscribe. So it shows, it's just like everything else. It shows the last 10 episodes.
Oh, I didn't see
subscribe.
That.
Subscribe.
Then bring back Google Reader. If they can do that, they can do Google Reader.
I know. It's an RSS feed, dang it. And, that's cool. Man, this is a long show. I don't usually see these times. Holy cow.
Never shut up.
Good Lord, it's a long show. 2 hours and 11 minutes last week.
See, if I search for Twig, we're like right down the bottom. Hang on, radio stations.
Well, that's the thing, is you have to search pretty much.
No, it's actually not showing up on the. It's not showing up on the phone.
Oh well, they've been rolling it out in kind of inconsistently on Android.
So maybe that's why I was confused. So if I search for Twit, I find podcasts. If I search for Twit,
yeah, you know what? I'm getting the same thing on the web.
Is podcast showing up on the left panel for you, Kevin?
I'm doing it on the phone, but. If I search for Twig,
if you see podcasts, okay, so this is true on Android as well. If you go to the hamburger menu, go to podcasts, and now search for Twig.
Ah, okay. Oh, and there's the subscribe button. Okay, I'll take it back.
And you know what? I'm still not getting it.
Okay. I'm not sure what it's Twig.
It's new. This was something we actually were working on for months with them, and we're NDA'd on. I think we were one of the first networks they approached to just try out, see how it worked.
What about and then they don't complain to you about advertising or anything like that?
Oh, no.
So do you have to do a submit specially, or is there
it's very much like iTunes, where you submit this RSS feed, and they send you an email confirming, and you click the link, and then you're in.
And that's public now? I should go and submit some of my old ones.
I think so, but that's exactly what iTunes does as well.
Yeah.
They aggregate independently, but I don't think so. I think that they you have to submit it.
That's interesting. Yeah, so if I click subscribe, I get this, subscribe to This Week in Google, and there's three checkboxes, auto-download, the latest three, notifications, and playback order, newest to oldest.
Nice. Very good.
And if you go to play.google.com and do podcasts, then this comes up. And this is where you can get started with sharing your podcast.
Look at the number one show there.
Yeah.
Well played.
Yeah, reach your audience.
Nice.
Okay, because they announced this a couple of weeks ago and I couldn't find it. So I guess I hadn't been rolled out yet.
Yeah, exactly. It's not an instant rollout.
Okay.
What else?
I will try that out.
Scanning through here.
Yeah, let's see what else there is.
WhatsApp, that was funny. 72-hour blackout, again,
yeah,
overturned but
Facebook,
in hours.
Facebook's fighting it.
Facebook doesn't like it. A Facebook executive went to jail in Brazil briefly.
That's not a fun place to be, I imagine.
For a day, yeah. Especially if you're an executive. Can I bring my briefcase and suit? No.
Well, no, actually, in Facebook jail, they put you in a suit.
Right.
Suit is the new orange.
Amazon first quarter sales up 28% to $29.1 billion. Revenue is all you should ever look at Amazon because they have a little knob in Jeff Bezos' office about that turns profit up and down. Twitter is stock-wise yesterday at an all-time low, $13.99 a share. Twitter shares have plunged 39% this year, and they're down 66% from the IPO. And yet, it's still one of the most important institutions of the new millennium.
What would you do with Twitter as a business?
I don't know.
Twitter and Yahoo. What would you do?
Oh, yeah. Well, Yahoo's going to be sold to Verizon or somebody, right? That's the...
Yeah. What would you do with Twitter as a business?
So Yahoo's done. Twitter, yeah. I feel like there's so much... Why do they need to do anything? The stock price is the only thing that matters, right? Because they're making money, right? They're not running out of money or anything.
Yeah. I saw somebody in a panel say, yeah, this is... So only can making $2 billion be considered failure in the market?
Only to the stock market. Only to the stock market.
Yeah, it's like that's pretty good compared to any media company.
Yep. Roe v. buys TiVo, $1.1 billion.
I didn't realize that TiVo had Tom Rogers was a very smart CEO who brought it out of nothing and made it into a real company and real products, but I didn't realize it was starting to fade a bit, I guess, because there's enough competitive technology elsewhere.
Yeah, you know, it's still the best technology, but it's very pricey. You can rent the cable company DVR, as bad as it is, for a few bucks a month. You got to buy a TiVo, and then you have to pay a monthly fee for the subscription.
But I wonder if they'd held out just a little longer, you know, if the FCC does win at deregulating cable boxes and letting us all pick our own cable boxes, then being able to pick the TiVo without having to do the service.
Yeah. Oh, and that's another hurdle. You have to go to your cable company and pry a cable card out of them.
Oh, yeah, which is... Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not surprised TiVo doesn't have huge market share. It's a shame because it really is the best. So did either of you go to, what is it, Further Forward or Further Future? Further?
Yes, after all, I'm a member of the 1%.
So Burning Man was just getting jammed the hoi polloi. So the top 1% of the burners started their own.
They're both so obnoxious. it's like Ted on Dust.
And here's Eric Schmidt in his apparently homemade mirrored vest, although he didn't...
But you got to see the top hat, too. Somewhere there's a picture of the top hat.
He didn't effort enough to actually replace the gray cardigan and white shirt he was wearing beneath it. So maybe we could help him. A black turtleneck, maybe, Eric? Something just a little hipper.
I don't know if you can find it easily. There's a picture of Loic with Eric, both with their headdresses on.
Yeah.
There's that.
There's the top hat. And when asked, what did they ask him? Where did you get that? Did somebody give that to you? He said, no, it's mine. As if he made the mirror vest and top hat. I doubt it.
No. Okay. No.
I don't know. It's fun to mock.
I can see him with a glue gun, yeah.
Yeah. It's fun to mock.
And that's the whole point of this article. It is mockery, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it is mockery.
Yeah.
But they have their own...
There's Loic.
There it is.
I love Loic, but I think he's going through a midlife crisis.
Yes.
Having been there, I recognize the signs.
He's doing a daily video show now. Have you seen
this? Is he? No.
Yes.
He's got a new conference called Leaders, L-E-A-D-E-R-S.
E.RS or something like that.
Yeah, which is kind of interesting because he's trying to get, you know, folks to have a little more control over their world, which I like.
Yeah, and it's going to be, it's, you know, because he sold LeWeb, which was a great conference. I went several years. Yeah. I love Loic. He's a good friend, and I adore him. It's Leaders is going to be in France again. I mean, it's going to be like the new LeWeb, I guess.
I say this with love and respect and affection, but he is the master of the humble brag.
Right?
Here I am on the top of the mountain in my hang glider it's just hilarious.
One must follow Loic on Instagram and Facebook to really enjoy.
It's amazing.
I love the glasses. He's got sunglasses with a third lens for the third eye because one doesn't want to get one's third eye blinded by the light. See, Loic didn't wear a gray cardigan and white shirt underneath his fur.
I don't think Loic owns a gray cardigan and white shirt.
For vestments. No. Outside of Las Vegas, it's like a little Burning Man, it seems like.
But with trailers and concierges will get you whatever wish you have. But what is actually, they brag there are all kinds of business deals going to be done here. So it's Allen and Company on dust.
Oh, it's the Bohemian Grove for the new century.
But what's the actual, is the fig leaf of attraction is music?
Yeah.
Can I just be honest?
I think I've not been to Burning Man, but it's my strong impression that Burning Man is mostly about drugs and sex. And art, cars.
And music.
Is there music at Burning Man? Is it really?
Kevin, have you been?
There's tents.
I haven't been there.
No. I don't know. I don't think it's a music festival. It's an art festival.
Yeah,
in the middle of the most godforsaken place.
But part of it is like dance music and
There's dancing
and some lifestyle
and sex, and then there's some drugs, and then there's some more dancing and some more sex, and then there's some art, and there's some more sex and some dancing, and some drugs. I used to go to Burning Man when it was just a little bonfire out at Ocean Beach. I don't know what these young people are up to. I don't know what this is. Ray Publica had a mobile sauna. Did you put that in?
So this is a conference I went to in Berlin, this blogger conference that I love. And I did the sauna jokes there. In fact, then challenged people to meet me in the sauna next door, and some did. And so there was in a hotel next door. So this year they had a portable sauna at the Ray Publica conference. It's making me really mad that I'm not there.
I don't know, a portable sauna? Really?
Yeah, mobile sauna. I mean,
does that seem like a good idea?
So if you look at my Twitter feed, a couple guys sent me a picture of themselves. I think they were the guys I was in the sauna with 5 years ago from inside the sauna.
I don't want to get in a sauna with a bunch of bloggers.
we're already sweaty.
Yeah. I'm posting right now.
So I just thought that was, you know, imagine that at South by Southwest.
We're starting our own kind of little event here in Sonoma. I'd like to invite you all to. It's for the bottom 1%. It's called Burning Ham. And it's coming up in October. Oh, no, this is old. Okay. It's a celebration of delicious pork. But it does have Lagunitas beer, so that's, you know.
That's good.
Whole pigs being roasted. Take that, PETA.
There's something like that in San Jose last year. That was
Burning Ham.
I can't remember what it was called, but basically, it was like Bacon Fest or something. Basically, it was like food trucks full of bacon and beer.
Oh my god! It's downtown, just a heart attack on wheels.
It's like, sounds good.
Yeah. All right. I think it's time to wrap this up. As fun as this is,
I think looking at the length of the show scared you.
It did. I think I don't want to do 3-hour shows. We're headed that way. No, you know the real problem is, I don't want to edit, and B, I really like talking to you guys, and it's really fun, and I just feel like these shows aren't really shows; they're just a chance for me to get together and talk to people I like, and I coerce them into being here for a while, and so why would I cut it short? It's too much fun. And, you know, nobody ever really says, could you make shorter podcasts? They just turn them off. They go, okay, that's enough. I'm done.
Well, it was so funny when we brought in the wonderful Andy Berman, the producer of .NYC, which I haven't plugged yet, our brand new podcast we're working on in beta for New York out of CUNY. She said, she said, well, you're going to do like, we'll do like 20 minute shows, right? I said, oh, no, that's not Twitch. She said, okay, come on. No, really? I said, no. And so then she got it. She got into it. And so the first show we did, which is still not up yet, we got to put up with Emily Bell, the good video version, was about an hour.
Perfect.
And she said it didn't feel too long.
It should be as long as it needs to be.
Yeah. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Last week, I've only done two so far, but it's amazing being you, Leo. And I don't even pretend to be you, but to deal with the pressures and the difficulties that you deal with of trying to think of the timing and this and that, and you know, it's second nature to you, but it's nerve wracking.
It's hard work.
It is.
I really.
That's why you're so tired.
We're just having fun, getting together. We're talking with friends about stuff, important stuff. There's Burning Man. Out in the desert.
So the ethos of Burning Man is what you're not allowed to bring. What? This is a whole shtick, right? About you can't bring some stuff and you've got to live off the land.
It's kind of supposed to be.
You're going to take it away again afterwards, is the point.
Yeah, you got to. It's, yeah, nothing goes in that doesn't come out. And you're not supposed to bring money. There's not supposed to be money exchanged for anything.
Trash in, trash out.
But people often bring gifts, little gifts like chapstick. Like they might have 100 chapstick in a. And they hand them, and so people give gifts to each other, and it's supposed to be, it's kind of hippie-ish, but really it's about art. It's an art festival. It's not a music festival. It's an art festival. So people, all year long, and we have a lot of burners in Petaluma, all year long they'll build sculptures and create things, which they'll then bring out. And, I've never gone, because I don't want to get any alkali up my butt. It's in the middle of a very dry desert. They have sandstorm. Yeah, there you go, right there. Little sandstorms, and this is an unusually clear day. In fact, this year's Burning Man, last Labor Day was really quite messy. It's a dry lake. It's full of alkali. I don't know. We should go. We should do a show from there. We'd have to sit there naked. There's the famous sculpture. They burn these at the end. That's why it's called Burning Man. But I've been to the Bohemian Grove where they do the same thing. They burn. They have a ceremony at the beginning, the end, of cares, and they burn something at the end. And it's very much like the Bohemian Grove.
I think, Leo, you ought to figure out your own festival to do for the Twit Army.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What would that entail?
No, but then I'd be beholden to them, and I'd be part. Then I'd have to wouldn't be able to cover things freely because I'd have to keep my conference going and. I want to do a little version of Burning Man that I call Hot Tub Tech Machine. and it's me and our guests in a hot tub. That's all.
TMI follows.
No, you could wear a bathing suit.
That's even not necessarily the most pleasant thing, but go ahead.
I think the hot tub speeds up the show a little bit.
We're all raisins.
Yes. Anybody got a pick or a number or anything? You want to plug the indie webcamp? Or why don't you do that first,
Düsseldorf.
Kevin? And then,
Düsseldorf?
Is it in Düsseldorf?
It's indie webcamp Düsseldorf this weekend.
Nice.
We had one in Nuremberg a couple of weeks ago. So Germany's doing well this year.
They love the indie webcamp.
And then there is the big indie web summit in Portland coming up next month, which I need to put the... link for.
Somebody said I should call my hot tub a show Boiling Man. Thank you, Wumper Mill. IndieWebcamp.com, IndieWebcamp.com for all the information here. And this is about what? Keeping the web independent.
Yes. So there's it's a combination of events. There's an ongoing chat room, a wiki full of staff and tech specs and so on. So Homebrew Website Club is every 2 weeks in a bunch of cities. There's one tonight in San Francisco, Los Angeles, and Portland, though you've missed the ones that have happened already in Brighton and Göteborg in Sweden. And then scrolling down a bit further, there's Indie Web Camp, which is the two-day weekend-long thing, which is an unconference. It's basically one day of conversation and one day of hacking, and with demos framing beginning and end. And there's one coming up in Düsseldorf this weekend. And then there's the IndieWeb Summit in Portland in just under a month, June the 4th.
Now, I see that Bruce Sterling wrote about your principles way back when in 2013. Is he an Indie Webcamp supporter?
I think people connect to the ideas. I'm not sure if he's used it directly. But a lot of independent creators like the idea of owning their own site. It's part of the value of,
I think so.
What we're trying to do. And then the other two things that spin out of that are standards that we've been working on, are working their way through the W3C at the moment. And those are web mention and micropub. So micropub is the abstraction for letting you post to your site from elsewhere. And that is currently a working draft at W3C. It was actually published today, I think. And we're trying to get that. The basic premise is straightforward. You authenticate, and then you write your post, and then it posts to your site. But you can do that from anywhere. So that lets us build tools that let us have commenting between sites, or responses, or other tools that will read your post from somewhere else and bring them back in. So there's one tools that will, if you post something on Instagram, it'll then create a post on your own site for it. So it's a building block we use to let you post to your own site from elsewhere. And it's and then we have also got abstracted variations of that wrap existing sites and silos. So there's a thing called SiloPub that lets you use MicroPub with Facebook and Tumblr and Blogger and so on as well.
Oh.
So that's MicroPub that lets you use this very simple generic posting API, but across a bunch of different sites. And then WebMention is the other standard that's going through W3C at the moment. And this is for, I've said something about you on my site. And so in that case, if you have WebMention set up, I send to your endpoint this post on my site linked to this post on your site, and then you can interpret that to understand whether I was doing a reply or a like or an RSVP or whatever. And so that's that spec is going through W3C at the moment. And it's a good time to look at them because we've got reasonable number of implementations of both of them. But as we're trying to get this W3C group shut down by September, this is a good time to have a look at the state of these standards and see if we can get them finished. So if you're working on any of this stuff, do look at these, see if you can plug them into the systems you're building. Because we've already got, we've been building this stuff for probably nearly 5 years now. And it's mostly been building small protocols to interoperate between our own sites. But we think we've got them in a state now, and we've got enough implementations that they make sense to deliver standards.
What blog software do you use, Kevin? You use Known or with Known?
I use a mixture of different things. I use Known. I use a static site of my own at kevinmarks.com that I just post HTML to by hand.
But does it support all the micropub stuff?
It doesn't support micropub, but it supports WebMention. I use a service that lets you use WebMention with a static site. It basically has a WebMention endpoint, which can be off-site. And then I have JavaScript that injects the responses in my site. So if you go to kevinmarks.com and scroll down to the bottom, you'll see a bunch of replies and things that have been brought back into my site from that. Mm. But I don't have micropub working for that yet. So that would be something I should probably build. But part of it is that the posts I put on my own site, I'm often talking about HTML and things, so they tend to be a little bit handmade. Whereas the stuff that I share on other sites don't do that so much. So, like the SVG Sparklines one, for example, that one is me talking about how to construct stuff in SVG. So it has a bunch of code in it and then embedded SVG and things like that. And this stuff doesn't always translate well to trying to post on Facebook or Medium or something like that.
I use with none, but I wonder if Ben and Aaron are, how hard are they working on that? Is that still a big thing for them? Or
They're still working on it, but the challenge is, it's still working as an open source project. It's got a bunch of contributors, but I think they're doing other things as well. They've been doing consulting too.
Yeah,
because
stuff doesn't work quite on it a little bit.
Well, it works quite well, but the challenge they've got is getting people to pay for it.
I pay for it. Because
like any of these things, it's a project that you host stuff on,
right?
And they can get a certain number of people paying for it, but making it a sustainable business is harder.
Yeah, yeah.
But I use with known.
Yeah, you self-host it?
No, I host it with them. I host it with them.
Oh, you do? Yeah, might as well. Why not? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also it means that I'm testing the hosted version for them as well, which can be good. But it's with Known does implement all these indie web standards, and so if you want to play with this stuff, it's probably one of the easiest ways to do it. Yeah.
And it must be me because I can never get the sharing out. Like I'll click Facebook and Twitter and it never goes out anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You may need to re-authenticate. Facebook, you have to re-authenticate every couple of months.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then...
I don't know.
But yeah, but I've got that working like through.
I have to go back and
well.
Play with it. Webhooks doesn't work for me. A lot of the infrastructure seems not to be working. Okay. It's a simple, good, nice, simple blog, and it works well. But it doesn't. I want it to be. You know, it's a posse for me, right?
A lot of the value is in the posse and connecting these things together.
Yeah. I'll mess with it some more. I like it. I'll pay for it. I renewed it.
Excellent.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, maybe Jeff Jarvis would like to share a number with us. Right?
So I guess we're going to go back into a political moment.
Not horse copulation again. Oh, good.
Okay. No, we're not going to do that. So I just found this amusing. At the moment that Ted Cruz announced he was pulling out last night, the Google searches for libertarian spiked immensely.
According to
Libertarian Magazine, Reason Magazine, which was
Gary Johnson, our libertarian candidate for president. Wow. Look at those spikes. That's the entire Republican Party going, uh-oh. 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 Do we have, I know Gary is running. I don't know if he is the nominee. Do you have a nominee?
I don't know. I don't know how it works there.
Yeah. Oh, he should get a better picture on his website. He's a nice guy. Yeah, I like Gary, but he needs a better picture on his website. That's actually terrifying.
Right out of the sauna.
Be a libertarian with me. Maybe not. Not today. Thank you, everybody. This has been fun, as always. It's a great
to have you, Kevin, as
great
always.
Pleasure. Yeah, we love having Kevin. And anybody who wants to join us can do so every Wednesday afternoon, 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. We do it live. Be in the chat room. You can interact with us. If you can't do it live, on-demand audio and video are always available for all of our shows at our website, twit.tv. Or use your podcatcher, like Google Play Music, or iTunes, or one of the many apps written by our great friends on every platform, including Chromecast. And actually, I think there's a Chromecast app, yeah. Roku, for sure. Apple TV and more. Thanks for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.